Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans, for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board Cal Walters and Tom Claxton, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps. Good. And we welcome you to the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we have got an outstanding show coming up for you today. But first, I want to thank some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible. Right, Tom?
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship, USS Alabama Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ed's Seafood Shed, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, Patriot Roofing, Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens, and Lifeline Counseling Services, the Veteran 211 Hotline. And we'd like to say a special hello to Miss Linda out there tonight.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank all our sponsors. And, of course, you are great listeners because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. Remember, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. If you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired programs are up via most of the podcasting sites. Just search for Scuttlebutt or SBN. And if you like to listen to Tom's Tirade and get your blood pressure up on demand, you can do that via castbox.com. You can also check us out on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And we got a packed show coming up for you tonight, so you can always check out the stack at scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information on the topics of the day. Coming up later on SBN, we'll talk with our legal eagle, Colin Kimmerly, from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. He'll get us up to speed on a number of legal issues facing our veterans and their families and a couple of fairly important court cases that have come down that can affect and may affect how our veterans are able to approach the government through the court system for various issues. So you certainly want to stick around for that. Also, the Air Force has declared war on hopelessness within its ranks. It's an interesting story. It kind of pivots from what we talked about last week, Tom, with the suicide rate in the Air Force.
It's really unbelievable. Yeah, it's unbelievable that they would have that much more problem there.
It is. It's interesting, Tom, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but just when you think about the fact that so many of the experts are saying, well, the suicide rate has to do with all these deployments, it's not really showing that in the Air Force, and so that trend is not holding. So we'll have to look into it. Certainly something that we will continue to follow. But later on, Tom's Tirade on Black Hawk down to Benghazi. It's a good one you don't want to miss. But first, in what seems to be a stark contrast to the prior administration's handling of problems at the VA has placed 9 of its leaders and staff on leave after a veteran died in the wake of being left in a room covered in ants. Now, just some of you out there, this may already be too much for you.
Yeah.
if you've got an issue with ants.
I'm wondering about the ant deal and the guy laying dying in a nursing home, and he's got 100 ant bites on him. But what the hell's going on?
Well, Tom, the thing is that with the prior administration, we saw a lot of folks that just kind of got shuffled around, or they got sent home, got all their pay. They weren't really taken or to task for things that went on. But this is something that when the word came down, this was Tuesday, that the VA took swift action. They're calling it a scandal. I don't think it's a scandal. Obviously, there's a problem there. But over a situation where a patient suffered more than, like you said, 100 ant bites while he lay dying at an Atlanta VA nursing home. They placed the regional leader, chief medical officer, and 7 staff members on administrative leave during this investigation. The network director, Leslie Wiggins, was put on leave. Chief medical officer, Dr. Ajay Dawam, was reassigned to other duties. And there's a board that's going to look into how the Atlanta VA Medical Center handled the issue, which involved a resident at the Eagles Nest Community Living Center on the hospital campus. The veteran, Air Force veteran Joel Marable, was left in a room, and they don't know. They're not necessarily saying that the ants contributed to his death. He had cancer and was dying, but staff checked on him at one point, and basically the room, including the veteran lying in the bed, was covered in ants.
Oh my God. How negligent can you be to any person, any damn person, much less a vet, under a care?
Well, Tom, my question is, it's going to take some time for ants to cover a person, much less an entire room.
That tells me that there was a lack of care, and they weren't checking on that guy. They weren't checking to see what kind of shape he was in.
Well, on what time frame? Do they not have a time frame on which to monitor?
Right.
Check pulse, check blood pressure, all that kind of stuff. Granted, that sounds like he might have been in something of a hospice situation, Tom.
It does.
But goodness knows,
yeah.
I mean, the situations that I've seen with regard to hospice, you've got nurses that are coming by there all the time.
Every 10, 15 minutes. But that could not have happened, within 10 or 15 minutes. That's something that had to be an ongoing situation for hours, Cal. I mean, that doesn't happen with ants and all that. They're all over the wall, they're on the ceiling and everywhere else, and then all over the patient. Hell, that don't happen in just a few minutes.
Well, yeah, the daughter of the veteran, she was told that staff checked on him. Again, we don't know a time.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
But the staff thought, quote, he wasn't even alive because the ants were all over him.
Mm-hmm.
I know weird stuff happens.
Oh, yeah, man.
But I don't want to think about that. Covered in ants. Then here's the thing. They cleaned the room, but then the staff could not get rid of the ants.
Well, you know what that tells me, Cal?
Room.
The room had to be filthy. The vet probably had bed sores or something from him having cancers out there. If the cancer was an exposed cancer on his exterior part of his body, then, it was a reason or a smell for the ants to come to it, That just doesn't happen without negligence.
No, I would have to say that has to be, that's got to be somewhere in this equation, Tom. If nothing else, somebody's got to answer the question, why was this veteran not checked on? Or how long had he not been checked on for something like this to be able to happen?
That's a damn shame.
I will say the Atlanta VA healthcare system said they took action to ensure no other residents were affected. Of course, they apparently couldn't get rid of the ants in the bed.
Right.
Apparently, they basically stripped the entire room. They brought in a private pest control company and a regional pest control expert. I mean, goodness knows, this just sounds like something out of a horror movie.
Right. Well, it tells me that there was more. They wasn't just looking around for a little sugar.
No. It's just, can you imagine being the veteran just lying there and having this happen to you?
Don't even want to think about it, man. Woo, getting me cold chills.
But, hey, Tom, the good news is apparently somebody's taking some action and taking it quickly. So
that's
we'll
the good part if there's a good part.
Yep. On the other side of the break, Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Garberg. And Kimmerly, our legal eagle, is in the house. When we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphone. Check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SDN. In fact, a couple of the stories we'll be talking about today are up on the Twitter feed, so you can pick up some information there as well. But it's always an honor and privilege to be joined by our C lawyer and legal eagle, Mr. Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Garberg. And Kimmerly, Colin, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Thank you, Cal. It's been a while since I've been on with y'all, so it's a pleasure to come back and talk to our veterans.
Well, Colin, I know that there are a couple of different court rulings that have come down over the last few weeks that affect veterans and how they can move forward in the judicial system in dealing with the VA. Probably the one that I think is most impactful is a ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims concerning the Veterans Disability Claims Appeal process. Tell us a little bit about that and how that impacts our veterans.
Right. That decision was issued back in mid-June of this year, and it was actually notable because it was the first decision that addressed a class action case. About a year ago, I think the Federal Circuit up in Washington told the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims that they could have class action lawsuits, that they could handle those. They didn't do them in the past, but now they will. And apparently the first one had to do with the appeals process, as you described, what we call the legacy appeals process or the old appeals process, where a veteran would receive a rating decision, the veteran would file the notice of disagreement, then the VA would issue what's known as a statement of the case. In response to that, the veteran would file what's called the VA Form 9. Okay, after the Form 9 is filed, then the regional office has to certify the Form 9 appeal to the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, the BVA. And what we're seeing, or we have seen, is that there was always a real big lag between when you would file the Form 9 for the veteran and then when the regional office would certify it. I mean, I'm talking a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years until they certified it. And what does that mean when they certify it to the BVA? That means that they basically have reviewed the file and sent it to Washington. That's it. And then it would get on the docket at the Board of Veterans Appeals, and then eventually you'd either have a decision, or if you requested a hearing, they would conduct the hearing and then issue the decision. So this case, which was in June, the court said, hey, you know, y'all are waiting too long to certify these cases. So anything that's been over 18 months, you're going to have to identify that. I think by August 12th, they had to identify every case that was more than 18 months old that had not been certified. And then by October the 11th, they must certify them. So that's actually great news for veterans, because I think it will get those cases moving along to the board.
Well, that's an awesome thing, Colin. Do you feel like a lot of our guys will fall into that category?
Yes, I do. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, I've seen an uptick in certifications. I've seen a movement both by the regional office and by the board on these cases. So, yes, I definitely believe it's going to help our veterans here in our area, for sure.
Man, that's unbelievable. Is there anything else with that particular case that we need to bring forward?
No, I would just say that anybody that has a Form 9 that's pending, now it's hard to know whether the case has been certified. Sometimes you can call the VA and see if it's been certified. A lot of veterans are savvy enough to check their e-benefits and see if it's been certified, or they need to check with whoever their representative or attorney is to make sure it's been certified. But I can tell you that I think by October, all of those cases that are 18 months or older will be certified. Now, we still have cases that are under 18 months, so I'm certainly going to be keeping an eye on those, and everybody should. When you hit the 18-month window on that,
right,
you probably want to start sending letters to the VA and say, hey, we're over 18 months, you know, we need to certify. And we need to keep an eye on this and see if this is an ongoing issue that the VA and the court is going to be addressing. But let me say this. These are under what I call the legacy appeals system, because in the future there aren't even going to be any statement of the case. There aren't going to be any VA Form 9. I think that the Board of Veterans Appeals is going to make an effort. And I remember going to a conference where the chief judge indicated they were going to make an effort to move on the legacy appeals. So I'm very hopeful that we will get some action on these cases.
That would certainly be of help. I see that, like, one of the cases that we have information on there that lady had been waiting 6 years.
Yep. I'm not shocked, because what happens is she would have filed her VA form. I assume she filed her VA Form 9. If there was additional evidence submitted and the VA would have reviewed that evidence, they may not have certified the case. And if somebody kept sending evidence in, that's another issue. They're going to keep looking at the evidence and not certify it until they think all the evidence has been submitted. And there are ways to handle that. So the veteran needs to talk to their representative and their attorney about how to handle submission of additional evidence on a case where a VA Form 9 has been submitted.
Colin, with the vets that have filed through, say, the VFW, American Legion Post, or a DAV, right, would they have this information? I mean, could they handle what you're talking about doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they could.
So they could research it and handle the information as well.
I believe they could, yes.
Well, I'm just glad to see that this ruling helps ensure that we get some consistency across the VA's process and all, because these class action lawsuits can bring about a lot of corrections.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about another one in a minute, but these are the first two that I've seen that have certainly addressed issues that are across the system or across the, you know, the administration about problems that numerous veterans.
Right.
Certainly, I mean, there's people all across the country that are waiting for these Form 9s. That's certainly not somebody just here in Alabama or Mississippi or Florida. That's all over.
Good gracious.
So I very much am glad to see those.
Yeah, it's all that being said, do you feel like that the backlog that we've continued to talk about over the years, do you feel like any of that has been displaced and brought more current?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Hopeful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could talk about the way the new system is going to work on the backlog, but on, you know, the legacy appeals, I do think they're going to address those and try to get them done. Now, I heard that they were going to get rid of all legacy appeals in a year or two, but you know, we'll have to see how that goes. I'm not that hopeful, not that optimistic, but I do think there is some movement on addressing these appeals. Yes,
that's awesome to, you know, even see any daylight at the end of the tunnel there.
Right.
With the lack of interest and fairness that we've had in the past. Anything good is great for me.
Yes.
All right, we've got about a minute left here. Then we come back. Did you want to talk then about the VA is going to have to pay for the veterans' emergency room care?
I just saw that decision came out, I think on September 9th, that the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims invalidated, said that the VA couldn't follow one of their internal regulations about reimbursement on ER visits. So, this is a second class action. Several plaintiffs had filed together and said, hey, you know, they're not paying us for our ER visits. The plaintiff that the article talks about,
30,
and had to go to an ER outside the VA system and get that, and she had a $20,000 bill. I think her private insurance paid all but like $2,500, and the VA would not pay for the rest.
Good gracious.
So now they're going to have to. Or they're going to have to re-adjudicate the reimbursement decisions and see if they can pay all that out to the veterans for the emergency room care. So, again, another great use of the class action system to try to get a lot of people that are facing the same problems relief.
All right, brother. We appreciate you calling. Hang on a little bit. We'll get a break and listen to our fine sponsors. And we'll be right back with you, brother.
Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today. But only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
No, yes, sir.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion, or if you have any questions about the topics that we cover, check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN.
We certainly want to thank folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park. Our sea lawyer, Colin Kimberly, is prepared to have him on board with us here tonight. And all the fine folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. Viva Medicare of Alabama. Patriot Roofing. Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And Lifelines Counseling Service. The Veterans 211 Hotline.
And we are talking with our legal, Mr. Colin Kimberly from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly. Colin, again, thank you for joining us here on the Scuttlebutt.
Thank you, Cal.
Colin, I know prior to the break, we talked about a couple of different court cases, but I think the thread that's common to each is the concept of veterans being able to be granted a class action status. What exactly does that mean? I know there's an impact for these two cases, but what's the broader impact for veterans dealing with the VA?
I think the ability to file a class action, so we have a lot of veterans are in this sort of, lack of a better word, in the same boat. I mean, they're in the same situation. You know, the two classes that we've seen, the first one where the VA wasn't certifying the appeals to the BVA, the second one where the VA system-wide was not reimbursing emergency room visits. It just shows that a class action, each one of those people had to bring their own case. It'd be, I think there were two plaintiffs on the first one, four on the second one. Yet you may have six different decisions. And this way, you can add a bunch of people together as a class. It represents, you know, veterans all over the country. And it just makes it more efficient judicially to address those cases when the same situation pops up over and over. And I think we're going to see more class actions. I was thinking about this today. I mean, we all know situations where the veterans are, you know, are harmed because system-wide the VA is either not doing what they're supposed to do or not following the regulations. I mean, I could think of situations like involving Board of Veterans Appeals remands. You know, we all know if you get a remand, that's a great decision, but you're going to wait until somebody acts on the remand. It's going to be forever. So I'm hoping to see maybe that'll be addressed. I mean, there's other situations that I can think of where veterans would be, it'd be advantageous for the veterans to get together and just file a class action and try to get system-wide reforms by the court on the system.
Colin is talking about the veterans. Talking about the veterans getting together for a class action suit. Is that something that we could do on a local level, or how would the vets go about that?
You know, it's something we could explore on a local level. I will note that the two cases that we talked about tonight were both, I think, under Bart Strickman, who is with the National Veterans Legal Services, and they have done a lot of major multi-litigation over the years. I think they were responsible for a lot of the Agent Orange cases many years ago, and I think they're just in a position, there's some firms and some groups that are just in a position to handle that a little bit better. So certainly we want to think of class actions. It's just, you know, there's a lot involved in getting a class action certified, which is what happened in both of these cases. The classes were certified, which is a huge issue, and then addressed by the court.
So, Colin, how do you fit in? I know you mentioned this National Veterans Legal Services Program, but, I mean, obviously you have a number of cases. I'm certain that you have cases that you're working with and veterans that you're working with where they're in very similar circumstances. I mean, if somebody is looking for, you know, maybe they're asking questions, am I part of this? I mean, can they come to you and can you answer that question?
Absolutely, especially on the Form 9 issues with the certification to the board. I mean, that's something we handle every day. Okay? I don't really so much have handled the ER reimbursement cases, but if you have a question about that, that's certainly something we could address as far as letting you know whether you're somebody that could be part of the class action, or the class on that, to handle that to the VA and put you in the right direction.
Yeah. Great. So it's still a great idea to be able to pick up the phone and reach out to somebody there at Guardburg and Kimberly to find out exactly where they stand. Now,
absolutely.
I know one of the cases that we talked about dealt with appeals. I know that there was this new appeals system kicked in earlier this year. What are you seeing? Is it helping veterans? Is it causing more problems?
Okay, so effective February 19th, any decision, initial decision, I guess, made by the VA was now under what's known as the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, also known as the AMA. And they're all kind of new rules. Like, if you get a rating decision, let's say you got a rating decision today, and you had filed an application, say, back in March for, you know, three issues, and the VA denied all three issues, and you got your decision today. Now you have choices. You can file for what's called a higher level review, you can file a supplemental claim appeal, or you can go to the Board of Veterans Appeals, three different routes. And the new system allows you to actually go to a different route for every issue. If you have three issues, you can go to three different routes, depending on the evidence in your case and the facts and the regulations, or how you want to argue it. So we are doing new appeals, AMA appeals, in my office, and we are getting some decisions back. I'm going to say we are getting decisions on those appeals back, but I haven't seen a lot of movement toward granting a lot of things under the new system yet. And maybe that's just because we're just getting into it. I mean, today is August, so, you know, you're basically talking about 6 months, and, you know, it's probably going to take a year to 18 months for them to get all the kinks worked out, in my opinion. So, you know, a lot of my cases are still in the legacy, what's known as the older or legacy appeal system. And as I talked to you earlier, I think the board on legacy appeals that are before the board are going to be moved. So, you know, I am seeing some movement in that, some more scheduling of hearings and some more decisions coming out. So I'm very happy about that for our veterans. So, yeah. I just think it's going to take a little while until they work all the kinks out and get this new system going.
Well, obviously, the ultimate goal is to whittle down the backlog in appeals. Do you see that happening quickly, or is that just something that's going to have to happen as they figure out the kinks?
I don't think it's going to happen quickly. You know, the whole idea was to give the veteran a choice. The veteran has a choice. He can choose either to just argue that the regulation or the law was incorrectly applied. He can supply new evidence that's a supplemental lien, or he can just go to the board and have them look at it. You know, but let's take this to another extreme. Let's say he had 40 issues, and yes, I have seen cases with 40 issues. Okay? He's got to take each 40 issues and decide which lien do I want to go into. You know, you're going to do 10 in one issue, you know, 20 in another issue. I mean, it's just, I don't know if that's, you know, he's got a lot of choice, but does he know which choice he should make? I mean, in the old system,
well, but that's where
disagreement. You went one
that's
way.
Where you come in.
Yeah, that's right. No, I agree. I'm just saying, you know, it's supposed to make it easier for them, but for veterans. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. Maybe it will in the end, because it's going to eliminate one step of the process. It's going to eliminate the statement of the case and all that stuff, which I think actually would be good in the end. But I don't know. You know, there's all kind of rules about effective dates. We haven't even gotten into that. You know, I just don't know, you know, are they going to start eliminating effective dates? And are you going to have your older effective date if you need it? Are you going to be able to argue that? That's where, you know, the attorneys are going to come in, because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be going for the oldest effective date that I can possibly come up with for people on their claims. So,
that's
what we're going to do.
You know, Colin, what it sounds like is it's kind of like when they widen the interstate. All they do is they give you more lanes to get stuck in.
That's a great analogy. I haven't heard that. That is a great analogy. Yes.
Okay. It'd take a Marine to come up with that, baby.
Because in the new system, you can endlessly appeal. Like, there's no stoppage. I mean, every time you get a decision, as long as you have a new piece of evidence, you can just appeal. I mean, you could be appealing for the next 30 years. I mean, and... Yeah, they may never award your case, or they may award your case. But yes, that's you know, they used to call it the mouse wheel or whatever. Like you were a mouse on a wheel and you were just endlessly spinning, the hamster wheel. But I think the highway analogy is perfect.
Hey, Colin, we are up against a break. We appreciate you joining us. Real quick, where can folks go for more information?
Absolutely. They can always call us at 251-343-1111 or www.gardberglaw.com.
Thank you. Again, our legal, Colin Kimmerly from the law firm of Gardberg and Kimmerly. Hey, on the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on Black Hawk down to Benghazi. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Recent headlines from Washington have had me thinking about events from this so-called dark continent, events which saw our brave warriors on the front lines of freedom left twisting in the winds of political change and partisan expediency. Headlines that have swirled around the threats of bloc nominations in the Senate over requests for additional information over the massacre in Benghazi. The confluence of the two have caused my thoughts to drift back to an eerie similar scenario which occurred on the African continent nearly two decades ago. It was under the Clinton administration when our nation's warriors faced the specter of defeat at the hands of an unruly mob of fanatics, along with abandonment at the hands of an administration hell-bent on political expediency. For those of you who are too young to have seen it or too short-sighted to remember, the events of the Battle of Mogadishu were chronicled in the excellent book, Black Hawk Down, A Story of Modern War, and the graphically realistic movie, Black Hawk Down. Both very accurately portray the story of the events of October the 3rd and 4th, 1993, although they both conspicuously avoid any discussion of the decisions leading up to the conflict or the lack of decisive leadership from the White House during the course of the battle. The story revolves around Task Force Ranger, consisting primarily of U.S. Army Rangers from the 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, Bravo Company, 1st Special Force Operational Detachment Delta, better known as Delta Force, and helicopters from 1st Battalion, 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. Although novices of the battlefield, this group was as highly trained and motivated as any of our armed forces that we fielded at that time. The Rangers were still the Army's elite, and Delta Force was the cutting edge of the Spec Ops community. Together, they were tasked with restoring peace in the war-torn country of Somalia, which had seen its president overthrown in 1991 and its country thrown into a clan violence leading to a collapse of civil society. The U.S. found itself in Somalia after pictures of starving, fly-infested children made their way into the international community, sparking a cry for desperately needed humanitarian assistance. Soon after began the first round of using the U.S. military as a global Meals on Wheels program in an effort to ensure that food and supplies from around the world were not confiscated by the Klan warlords, specifically Mohammed Farid Adid. Although the initial surge, which included elements of the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, met success in restoring delivery of the relief supplies, the Somalis were unable to maintain order and Adid seized power, casting the UN and U.S. as occupiers rather than peacekeeping liberators. Does that sound familiar? In the ensuing escalation, Adid and his followers began a guerrilla war with the U.S. and UN, which ultimately led to Task Force Ranger finding themselves in the house-to-house urban warfare of October the 3rd and 4th, with an operation to snatch two of Adid's lieutenants, which was supposed to last no more than 30 minutes, lasted nearly 2 days, resulting in 18 Americans dead, 80 wounded, and one captured. The Battle of Mogadishu highlighted the misuse of military power by a feckless administration, both in the failure to understand the magnitude of the enemy, which resulted in an improperly deployed force structure as the U.S. was without its own heavy armor component. In a shameful display of failed leadership from the commander-in-chief, our Rangers had to fight their way out of Mogadishu, with many having to literally spring their last leg to reach a U.N. compound and what would become known as the Mogadishu Mile. The Clinton administration's subsequent decision to cut and run from Somalia rather than annihilate Adid and his followers led an obscure Islamic terrorist named Osama bin Laden to postulate that the U.S. would be defeated because his leaders did not have the stomach to fight. In 2001, he tested this theory with disastrous results. Although seen as a defeat, the Battle of Mogadishu was not without its heroes. Among them, Master Sergeant Gary Gordon and Sergeant First Class Randy Shugart, who selfishly sacrificed their lives by voluntarily inserting themselves into the crash site of a downed Black Hawk helicopter. In an eerie foreshadowing of events, nearly 20 years later on the African continent, both were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Their corpses were among those shown throughout the world in the images of our soldiers' corpses being abused, burned, and dragged through the streets in the aftermath of the battle without recourse. Images that will make my blood boil and leave me saying a few choice words for the cigar aficionado in chief. I have much the same response to our current commander in chief on a number of grounds, none less than the massacre of Americans in Benghazi last September the 11th, in which U.S. Ambassador Stevens was tortured and killed along with two Navy SEALs who volunteered to insert themselves into the consulate and were killed in their efforts to defend their fellow Americans while waiting on help that would never come. Does that sound similar? Many now believe that they were likely killed by our own damn weapons, which had been walked into Libya by the administration in support of the Islamic rebels. To date, there has been no retaliation for this act of war on the U.S. We, the American people, have yet to be told the truth of the events that day by anyone in this administration. I hope that few on Capitol Hill with the power to seek this will not give up in their quest. However, I think there is one truth that history will show. Our pivot to the Pacific and away from the Middle East, and now Africa, is unwarranted and dangerous. This administration's decision to cut and run from Afghanistan and Iraq and its subsequent support of uprising throughout the Middle East and Africa will only embolden the next generations of bin Ladens. Their insistence on sacrificing our military to pay for their welfare state will only serve to put our children and grandchildren at a disadvantage when facing future generations of tyranny determined to defeat the great Satan. One might think that the brutal murder of Ambassador Stevens would lead to an understanding that diplomacy just doesn't work in countries that know only mob rule, that unconditional surrender is sometimes necessary, and hey, it works. Unfortunately, our nation is sorely lacking in the leadership category in Washington these days, with politicians that are more concerned with growing their own damn power than doing what is right for this nation and its people. But that would take courage, and we seem to be led by a cult of cowardice. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
Where's your drill sergeant, man?
Load up, sir!
Load up, sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Well, great tirade there, Tom. Actually, that's when we brought back, because Benghazi, the anniversary was last week. We couldn't play them both, so we brought that back. Great information there, but a good show. That's going to bring us to the close of tonight's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans. We thank you for joining us. Hopefully you will join us again soon. Until then, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those that are in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah!